Okay, we're going to start at Kufyud Ten Amud Bet, and we're going to try to see if we can get to the bottom of Kufyud Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, and then leave for tomorrow a daf, and then finish up on Tuesday at the Siyum.
Go.
We're going to start from Nityabmu v'metu. Okay, we're at the second line of the Gemara here, or the third line. Nityabmu v'metu ayivamim. Asurim linase. Rabbi Lazar omer ho il v'hu tru liyivamim hu tru l'chol adam. This is a line in the Mishnah that says basically like this. If there's three brothers, okay, each woman testifies about their own husband. Mm-hmm. So two women say, okay, three brothers. Okay, assume they're all married or at least two are married. Each woman testifies, each of the two women say, my husband died. Now what did we learn? They're not ne'emanot to testify about their tzara. So therefore, we can't believe them when it comes to the other wife. So which means, if there's only two brothers, then the other woman basically can't do, she's supposed to do Yibum, because she doesn't know for sure the husband's dead, because she can't rely on the testimony of the other one. So this is actually a case not of the Tzara, it's of the Yivim To, right? Of the possible future Tzara when she does Yibum, right? Two wives, two husbands. If one dies, then the other one's going to become her Tzara. So therefore, each is not believed for the other. But what happens? If there's a third brother, well then they can each just do Yibum with a third brother. So, I claim my husband died. I go do Yibum with brother number three. No problem, because brother number three is there. Let's say both wives do Yibum with brother number three. And now, brother number three dies without kids. Now, the question is, once we've allowed them to marry based on their testimony, right? So can we now believe the other one? In other words, if there's brother A, B, and C, right? Let's say there's A, B, and C. So A's wife claims he died. B's wife claims he died. And C, they both can marry C now, right? Two women marry C. So now when C dies, can we base on the first one's testimony that her husband's really dead and therefore there's no more Yabam and she can go get married? And based on wife number B's testimony, wife number A can now get married also. Or do we have to say, no, it's still a case of the Yivama. We don't believe the Yivama. And therefore, you can't assume that the Yabam is dead. And therefore, you're stuck. Okay? So, what do we say? So they say, Asurim linase, they can't get married. Okay? But Rabbi Elazar omer, ho ilvu hu truli yivamim, hu truli chol adam. Rabbi Elazar disagrees. And he says, since they already remarry based on this testimony, you have to remember, what's our concern? Okay, and this is what we're going to get to in a minute. Let's just read it inside before I explain it. By Rava, my time of Rabbi Elazar. Now we're going to raise a possibility that we haven't raised before, but maybe really is a possibility. Does Rabbi Elazar hold it in general? Mishum de kasavar tzara mi'idala chaverta? Does he hold that we believe these wives about the other ones, right? Really, this is the case of the Yivama. But he's basically saying it's the same as Yivama logic is the same as the Tzara logic. Because what's the Yivama? She's a future potential Tzara, right? If your husband were to die, you become my Tzara. So now, does he disagree with everything we've learned until now about these five women? And he thinks, okay, you know, we've been disturbed a little bit by this hatred. And he just thinks there is no such thing. Okay? A tzara can be me'ida, l'chaverta. Like, no problem. Any of these women can be trusted. Is that his issue? And that's why he says this? Now, Tosfot says, what do you mean? Where is he coming from out of the woodworks? Why didn't you mention him earlier? Like, Tosfot doesn't like this explanation. He explains it in a bit of a different way, that tzara me'ida, l'chaverta is a little something different. But that seems to be the basic shot here. He just disagrees, in which case he would disagree in all the cases. He would disagree about all five women. And he would think, no problem. Or maybe he would just disagree about the tzara and the yivama. It's not 100% clear. O Dilma, or maybe you would say, and this is very logical to say this, Mishum, right, and I thought about this when we were learning the Mishnah before, and I was wondering why it wasn't really addressed, but here you see he's addressing it. Mishum dihilo makalkala nafsha, dihilo makalkala nafsha. In other words, what happened here? We're worried that she's lying. Why is she lying? Because she wants to mess up the other woman. She wants to create a situation where the other woman gets married, in comes her husband, and boom, like in this case, it would be, oh, you can't do Yibum, right? In other words, you couldn't have married someone else because you were chayv in Yibum, okay? But she already got married based on this testimony, which means that she's messing herself up. In this case, what's the mess up? She is over at Isur Karet of Eshet Av. She's marrying her husband's brother. She's not going to do that just to mess up someone else. Like, she's totally messing herself up. So there, now, Lamai Nafkamina, and this is a very important Nafkamina. So what's the Nafkamina between the two options? Does he hold that Sarah can always be with the Chaverta? Or only in the case where she actually acted upon it, right? You could have a case where a woman comes to court and says, my husband died, and therefore, right, that the Tzara, based on that testimony, can go get remarried. But she doesn't remarry because she's, like, smart, right? She says, oh, he didn't really die. I'm not going to go get remarried, right? She just wants to mess up the other one. But if she were, right, and therefore, only if you would say Tzara Midah L'Chaverta would that work. But if you say it's only in a case where she's not messing, she wouldn't mess herself up, so then you would have to say it's only in the case where she comes to court and says, I want to get remarried, and she goes and gets remarried, then her Tzara can also get remarried. Because once she's already done it, and we assume that she wouldn't mess herself up. So, nafkamina le'insubei letzar makam adida. Right? This is like when you say, "I have to taste my food to make sure it's not poisonous before the guests come." You know, so right, she has to get married first. It would be the nafkamina. Does she have to get married first to allow the tzara, or do we allow her in all cases to testify for the tzara? And we're just, you know, Rabbi Elazar thinks she's never suspect. Okay, so either she's suspect, but if we see that she goes ahead and does it anyway, then we know she's telling the truth. Or do we say, no, she's never suspect? So, Iyamart Sarami Dala Chaverta Afagav Delo Insiv Min Sabina Le Letzara, right? Even though, if you say the Tzara could be made Le Chaverta in any case, then even though she doesn't get married, you could be married off the Tzara. But Iyamart Mishum Dehilo Makalkala Nafsha, if you say she would never mess herself up just to get at somebody else, Insiv Min Sabina La Letzara, Insuf, if she gets married, minasbina la letzara, then we marry off the tzara. And ilo insuf, but if she doesn't get married, then lo minasbina la, right? We have to wait till she does it first, like the poison, right? You taste it first, then I'll eat it. So they say mai. So what is it? So now we're going to try to figure it out from different sources. So first they quote our Mishnah, which will be a good proof. Why? What does it say in our Mishnah? Rabbi Elazar Omer, what are the words of Rabbi Elazar here? Ho ilvu hu truly yavamim hu truly chol adam. He says, since they were already allowed to marry the Yabam, the third brother, therefore we now allow them to marry anybody, and we assume, right, wasn't meant to marry anybody, we assume the other husbands are dead, in which case they can go marry whoever they want. So again, Iyamar bishlama dihi lo makakala nafsha, that she wouldn't mess herself up, hainu dechi insuv min sabina la, right? That's exactly the words here. Since she already got married and acted upon her testimony, therefore we believe her testimony across the board. Ela Iyamar bishum ditzara mi'ida l'chaverta, afa gav delo insuv nami, right? If you say tzara mi'ida l'chaverta, then it shouldn't have had to say in the Mishnah that since she already got married. Okay, so you would have to say that that's the reason. So now the Gemara rejects it and says, no, lav dafka. It could be that Rabbi Elazar is saying this because they're saying, even you, Chachamim, should agree with me in this case. And that is very compelling, right? Because it shouldn't just be Rabbi Elazar's opinion, who we don't hold like, but it should be that even Chachamim would agree in this case. Why? What does it say here? Ella, Rabbi Elazar ledivrehem ka'amra lehu. He's talking lishitatam. He's saying to Chachamim in this Mishnah, lididi tzarami dal chaverta. I think it works in any case. I think that in any case, if a woman, because what's the, right? And I don't think that these women are suspect at all. But va'af agav delo insib min sabina le. And I think even if she doesn't get married herself, we allow the other one to get married. Ella lididchu, but according to you, Oduli mihat, you should admit to me that if imkvar she already goes out and gets married based on her testimony, you should agree with me, Chachamim, that even in that case she's going to be believed. You think she's going to go be over on Easter Eshet Av just to mess somebody else up? That's crazy. So Rabbanan, what are they going to say? You think they're going to agree? No way. Rabbanan, okay, they take their opinion all the way. Tamut nafshi im plishtim hu deka'avda. We saw this pasuk before, right? I'm willing to die with the plishtim. In other words, I'm willing to sacrifice everything. I don't care about my eshedach. I hate my tzara so much. I really want to mess her up. I'll go along with it, and, you know, even if I get burned. really, right? You know, it's sort of, you read Rabbi Elazar and you think, oh, there's hope. And then you read that and it's like, whoa, not at all. Okay. Tashma. So let's try it. So again, we don't have any clarity here because it could be the words of the Mishnah match Rabbi Elazar, which would prove, you know, is Rabbi Elazar, which would prove ho'il v'hu truly yivamim, only if they get married. But then we said, no, maybe he's just speaking l'shitat chachamim. So let's pick another option to try to prove it. Tashma, ha'isha shalcha hi u'bala l'medinat hayam. This is a braita. She and her husband go abroad. U'bava amra me'pali. She comes back and she says, my husband died. Tinase v'titol ketubata. Okay, she gets married and she gets her ketubah. We've learned this already. V'tzarata asura, right? And her tzara is not because Tanakama, right? Chachamim. Yes. Can't rely on her testimony. Rabbi Elazar omer, ho'il v'hutra hi. Hutra nami tzarata. Since she was matired herself, she also matires her tzara. Now, this seems to imply after the opposite. That no matter what, her testimony is accepted. If they accept her testimony for her, they accept it for someone else, whether or not she gets married. Seems to push the other side. Now they say, no. Ema, you could read this source as saying, ho'il v'hutra v'niset. Okay, since she is mutar, and since she was hutra and got married, therefore we also believe the tzara. So even though it doesn't say it, you could explain that that's what it means. So therefore, this source is not clear either which way. But now they say, but this braita doesn't make so much sense according to this. Why? Belichush dilma begita atai. What's our concern? If we just say ho'il v'hutra, okay, just that we allowed her to get married, and even if we allow her to get remarried, what's the concern in this case? What happened? She went with her husband abroad. Now, what's our concern always? That she's going to come back and try to mess up her tzara. So we don't know what happened when they were abroad. We have no idea. So she comes back and says, my husband died. Now, even if she gets remarried, it doesn't prove anything that she wouldn't mess herself up. Why? Because conceivably, she could have gotten a get from him when they were abroad. In which case, she's not even married to this guy, but she still has this vindictive nature against the woman who was his second wife. And she can go mess her up, right? In a way that wouldn't mess her up at all. So even if she gets married, it doesn't prove us anything. So if you want to take the approach that this is because she doesn't want to mess herself up, that doesn't work in this braita. Because in this braita, we have no idea what her marital status is at this point. Her marital status could be divorced, okay? So, belichush, why don't we worry? The dilma begita atai. V'hai deka amra hachi lekukule litzari hi mechavna. And she's just trying to mess up her tzara. So they say, if it was that you were going to get married to a Yisrael, you should be concerned for this. Okay? They're saying, if the reason is that she doesn't want to mess her up, that she wouldn't mess herself up also, this case would not be a good proof. Because in this case, we really would worry. That if we're worried about, the only issue is, that the only case we would allow it is if it's clear that she's not messing herself up too, well then this case wouldn't prove it. But hacha b'maya skina, and you would have to explain this time about to intsev l'kohen. She wants to marry a kohen, in which case she won't marry a kohen if she's a grusha. So we can know for sure if she's going to go marry a kohen, we know for sure she's not a grusha. In which case, we know for sure she's still married. In which case, we believe her when if she says my husband died and wants to get remarried based on this, and goes and gets remarried, then we can believe the tzara.
So only if she marries a kohen.
For the tzara. Only if she's marrying a Kohen does it work if we take the approach that Rabbi Elazar is only saying it in a case where she already gets married. Okay? But again, it's inconclusive about Rabbi Elazar. But the post can talk about it, it doesn't really matter. We don't know what Rabbi Elazar holds in the end. It doesn't make so much of a difference, Lemase, because we don't hold like him. So, you know, there's no practical ramifications to it. But it's interesting to see his opinion and the two options. Okay, new Mishnah. Aim Edin, now we're talking about what if you see this person dead? How do we know, right, that you saw him die? This is all these issues. Is he really dead? Is he really the right person? Okay, what are the criteria for how we determine if you really saw him die, if you really saw that this is the guy and you know for sure it's him? Aim Edin, ela al partsuf panim im achotem. You need to see his face with his nose. Af al pi sheyesh simanim begufo ubekelav. Even though there's simanim on his body and on his clothes, that's no good. It has to be face with the nose. Eimi dim ela anshe teisei nafsho. You can't testify until you've actually seen him fully die. Vafilu ra'u miguyad. If you saw him cut up from like a stabbing wound, vitzaluv on a cross. Okay, this was very common in those days, as you know from the Romans. Okay, if you saw an animal eating him, okay, all those things you have to wait till you see the guy's not breathing anymore. Okay? Or ad shenafshoh, however you would define that. Now the Koran talked about the often when they crucify people, sometimes they would actually take them off. And that the crucifixion itself doesn't cause death, it was the bleeding and the dehydration after that would cause the death. So it was definitely possible that something could have happened and someone could have come by and taken him off. He could have begged for mercy and they would have let him, and you know, it's possible. Not right, a chaya or chelet. We're gonna see, depends where the chaya is eating you, what part of your body. Okay, Maguyag cut up, we're gonna talk about what that is. Some distinctions of that. Ein me'idimbo, another criteria, ela ad shlosha yamim, until 3 days after death. Now, how they knew how long ago the guy died is a good question. Right? Nowadays, we know you can determine about basic times, about how long someone's been dead. So it has to be within 3 days of the death, because the point is after that, the body decomposes and he's unidentifiable at that point. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Omer, lo kol ha'adam ve'lo kol ha'makom ve'lo kol ha'sha'ot shavim. Depends on the time of year, whether it's cold, whether it's hot. It depends on different people decompose different times, different locations. So it could be water. In the water, there might be a difference. We're going to see that in the Gemara. It's unclear here, and the Gemara is going to ask this, is he machmir or mekel or neither? You know, does he think it's more time, less time, or does he just think there is no time? It just depends on the situation.
And I don't know if this is relevant, but in crucifixion, they say that it could take up to 3 days for the person to die.
Okay.
So that would be the maximum.
Uh-huh. But here I think they're saying it's even after he's, once he's fully dead, then you have 3 days.
Okay.
So it's not necessarily comparable to the 3 days of the crucifixion. That's what I think. Okay, so we're basically, this is already past that. Once you know for sure he's dead, you have within 3 days to make an identification. After that, your identification. If you say, I saw this guy a week after he died and I know for sure it's him, we don't take your testimony. According to Tanakama, according to Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, it's not clear. Tana Rabbanan, padachat velo partsuf, velo partsuf panim, partsuf panim velo padachat, eim idin ad shush nehem imachotem. Now they're adding that this Braita talks about it's not just the face. What does it mean, the face, partsuf? Right? It says partsuf imachotem. Here they say it also includes the forehead. The forehead is also an important part of the identification. I'm not sure why exactly the forehead. But they say, I mean, we're going to see a story that says that. I'm not sure technically if that's really the case. If without a forehead, you're less identifiable. But that's what this braita says. You need to see the padachat and the partsuf pnim. It's not enough just to see the padachat or just to see the partsuf. And you need the nose. Amar Abaye, v'item Rav Kahana, Mikra, where do we have a pasuk to prove this? Hakarat pnehem anta bam. Okay, it was the recognition of their faces that gave us the proof. Okay, it's a pasuk out of context, but that's what they use it for. Abba Bar Marta, Dehava Arba Bar Menume. Okay, this is the same guy they're just telling you, in case you know him by this name or that name. Hava Maske Be Debe Resh Galuta Zuze. He owed the Resh Galuta money. Okay, the house of the Resh Galuta, he owed taxes. Now, he was known to be a very poor guy. Okay, and he owed money, and he couldn't pay it. I take Kira, he took wax. Davak bevavliata, davak ba'apute, chalaf kamaya velo b'shakrua. So what happened? He put it on a bliata, that's like a worn out cloth, and then he put it on his forehead, okay? And then they didn't recognize him. So when they came around, they didn't recognize who he was. So here you see that if someone covers their forehead, they can look not identifiable. Okay, so the Mefreshim obviously talk about how could he have done this? Like, he was a good guy, you know, how is he faking them out? So they claim that the Resh Galuta knew he was poor and was willing to pardon him, but the guys who worked for the Resh Galuta weren't privy to this information, and they were collecting anyway. They didn't really care. So that's why he was avoiding them, but in a way that was mutar for him. Tough to know if that's really amiti, but that's how the Mefreshim try to support this guy, you know, how'd he do this? Anyway, the point being for us is if you cover your forehead, you're not so identifiable. Okay, now we have a big problem with this Mishnah. The Mishnah says simanim begufo ubekelav, and his clothes are not good. So now they're going to say, what do you mean? We've talked about simanim in other places, and simanim are good. And simanim, they claim, are doraita. Like doraita, we can count on simanim. Where's the big sugi with simanim? In mitzia, if you find a lost item, right, you return it with simanim. And simanim mean, right, if someone says, this is mine, so mita oraita, you have to return it to him if they give simanim. So now we're going to say this contradicts a different source, which actually isn't about mitzia, but it's something else about a get. So first they're going to say, Lememer de simanim lav d'oraita. Are you trying to say that simanim aren't d'oraita? Uriminhi. This contradicts another source. Mitzao kashur b'kisu ba'arnaki u'b'tabat. If you have a get, you're a shaliach. You bring a get, and then you lose the get. Okay? And then you find the get tied around your money bag, or your wallet, or your ring. Oshanim tza ben kelav, or it's between his stuff. Afilu lizman miruba. Even if it was a long time after he got the get, okay, a long time after, kasher, the get is good, okay? You can assume these simanim identify it as belonging to the shaliach, right? Assuming, let's say, someone else finds it on the street, right? He dropped his money bag that had the get attached, and they say, oh, whose money bag is this? He claims it by simanim, and then they say, oh, and here's the get that goes along with it. We can assume that was the get that belonged to you, and we can therefore deliver it. It doesn't make any reference here to the fact that a get has a name, of, right? It's interesting. I don't know why exactly. It doesn't make reference. I mean, again, people had similar names, and it very likely could have been someone else's get. We talked about this whole thing. You have to worry there's two other people by that name, and, you know, so I guess that
maybe
would be the issue.
Maybe it was time rolled up and they didn't want to open it because of, like,
but they knew it was a get. No, and then you'd be able to claim it with simanim. It was a get. It said this guy's name and that woman's name, and it was this date. I mean, you would think that you could claim that anyway. So now what do you see here? It seems like simanim or d'oraita, and when it comes to our body, right, claiming a body, it seems like it's not. Amar Abai lo kasha. Ha Rabbi Lezer ben Mahavai, ha Rabbanan. Okay, there's a machloket tana'im about this, and each source matches a different opinion. Okay, so how do we have this? Let's see the source. Titania, aim idim ala shuma. Okay, what's a shuma? A mole. If someone has a mole on his body, now we're getting back to body identification as opposed to, right, finding a get, which you might say, oh, those are two different things. Body identification is not the same as finding a get. But anyway, this one shows there's a machloket tana'im about body identification. So according to Tana Kama, you can't testify about a mole. That would match, obviously, our Mishnah. Rabbi Elazar ben Mahavai Omer Mi'idim. Okay, he says you can testify. Okay, you can say someone's dead based on a mole. So my la b'hakam b'flige, is this not their machloket? Demar savar simanim d'oraita, umar savar simanim d'rabbanan. That's the first understanding of this machloket. This machloket tanaim is exactly our issue. Are simanim d'oraita, are they d'rabbanan? If they're only d'rabbanan, then we can't use them for body identification. If they're d'oraita, then we can. Now they say no. I'm a Rava. Then we're going to have three options according to Rava, okay? Two are going to be that Rava thinks everyone holds simanim or d'oraita, but the machloket is about something else. And the third one is going to say that everyone holds their Durabanan, I think, if I recall, and then the Machloket something else. Right, exactly. So either everyone holds the Duraita or everyone holds the Durabanan. We're going to see three options. So here, Amar Rava, first option. Dekule alma simanim d'oraita, b'haha b'shuma metzuya b'ben gilo kam b'flege. Mar sevar shuma metzuya b'ben gilo, umar sevar ena metzuya b'ben gilo. What does that mean? Is a mole something that many people in that age range would have a similar mole in a similar spot? And therefore, if you see a mole in someone, let's say, in their 50s, you know, you can assume that's not necessarily an identifiable mark, because a lot of people have moles when they're in their 50s, and therefore you can't use it for body identification. And the other guy says, no, it's not a shuma mitsuya, but, you know, a shuma is not necessarily, it doesn't go like that, where, oh yeah, there's moles that are found in certain people from certain type of age ranges. V'ika da'amre, or some people say the machloket is not about that, it's about something else. Da'amre, so again, both hold simanim or d'oraita, but the shuma, there's a machloket, why? Ha'cha b'shuma ha'asuya lishtanot la'achar mita kamiflege. Mar savar asuya lishtanot la'achar mita, umar savar en asuya lishtanot la'achar mita. Okay? Do these moles change once the person dies? In which case, you can no longer use a mole as an identifiable symbol. Siman. Bika da'amre, third option. Amar Rava t'kulei ama simanim d'rabanan. Everyone agrees they're d'rabanan. Ba'cha b'shuma sima muvhak kamiflege. Mar savar sima muvhak, umar savar lav sima muvhak. While we say that simanim are d'rabbanan, we might say that there's certain simanim that are really good. In other words, most simanim are not such great simanim. But a mole, there's a machloket. Is a mole a siman mufak, like a real clear-cut siman, or is it not? And that's the machloket. Okay. Now they're going to ask a question. Going back to this lashon that Rava said about the tshuma is deoraita. Okay, everyone agrees that sorry, simanim are deoraita. Ulahach lishna de'amar simanim deoraita. Haktane, doesn't it say afal pi sheyesh simanim begufo bekelav? Right, but now we have a whole problem. This didn't. Right, this all addressed the machloket Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Lazar ben Mahavai, and Chachamim. But how does it relate to our sugya? That's if you say simanim midrabanan, then you could say, oh, well, that explains our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, simanim midrabanan, fine. But if you say simanim midoraita, how do you explain our Mishnah? Why can't we use these simanim on his body as identifiable simanim? So, what do they say? So you'd have to say then, these are simanim, even though generally simanim midoraita, the simanim in our Mishnah are very low-level simanim. They're not good identifying ones. For example, what's gufo? Okay, right? It says simanim begufo bekelav. Gufo is da'aroch begutz. Remember, we had this a lot. The gutz. Gutz is short and aroch, right? Oh, he was tall, he was short. Oh, very. That's really helpful, right? Kelav, dechashina l'she'ela. His clothes, right? You all know these stories about people who end up with someone's wallet by accident in their pocket and they die, and people assume because there's a wallet there that it's his, right? Or the clothes, right? Just because he's wearing clothes doesn't mean they were his. He could have borrowed them. So now they say, wait, but if you're going to worry that people borrow clothes, so we have a separate problem then. Ichashina l'she'ela, there's a different source. Chamor b'simanei uchaf. You can return a chamor to someone if they give simanim about their saddle. Well, saddles, people could borrow. So hechi madrina, right? How are you going to return based on the siman of an uchaf? If we just said that's not a good identifiable symbol, what's the word?
Sign,
thank you. Because people could be borrowing. So they say, no, lo shayla in she uchva, dimas kivle lechamra. It might cut the chamor, because if it's not exactly his size, it might mess up the donkey, and therefore you can't use the saddle as an identifiable, you can use it as an identifiable symbol, because people generally don't lend it out. Whereas clothing, people do lend out. Okay. Mitzao kashur bekisu ba'arnaki ubetabat. So if we just said that simanim are, the people can, if we just said the clothing can be lent out, so what about if you find the guy, the get, connected to his kis, arnaki, or tabat? Maybe he lent them out to people, right? So now they're going to say, all these cases, nobody would lend them out, okay? Tabat chayesh leziyufe. People are worried, what's a tabat? It's your chotemet, right? Your signature. People are worried, you'll forge it, right? You'll take it and make another, the word
in
copy, right? Yeah,
impression.
That's the word. What is
impression?
Impression, right? You make another impression. Kis va'arnaki menachshe inshe. People are it's like a superstitious thing. If you lend out your money, bad. They think people are going to take your money. Like it's a bad omen. So people wouldn't do it. V'lo moshle, and therefore they don't lend these things out. V'bayit ema, you could say, okay, so now we're going back to, what did we say? The goof, the siman, was it tall or short? And the clothing isn't a good siman because you might have lent it out. But now they're saying, no, maybe you say, we had all these questions on lending it out. Maybe that's not the issue. Maybe the issue is that the simanim of the clothing wasn't good. It was like, b'chiyure v'sumke. It was, oh, it was red. He was wearing a red shirt or he was wearing a white shirt. Okay, how many people wear white shirts and red shirts, right? Very common. So therefore, right, this is interesting, by the way. It shows that people wore red clothing, if you ever thought about it, right? What kind of clothing? So anyway, so you're just identifying it by the color of clothing, and that's not a good siman. Okay, now we're going to get to this Muguyad case, okay, where the guy is cut up. We're going to get into lots of graphic things here. Okay. Lamemer de Muguyad Chaye. Are you trying to say that if someone's cut up, they can survive? Uriminhi. That contradicts another source that we have in Mishnah and Ohalo. Adam eno metame adje tisei nafsho. At what point does man contract tumah into the house, right? Tumah oel. Okay, he's in a house. He's about to die. He's not metame until he's actually fully dead. Afilu meguyad. Even if he's cut up, afilu goses. Even if he's lying on his deathbed and about to die. Now, what are they assuming from here? They're making an interesting assumption. Timuye lo metame hamichya lo chaya. He's not metame yet, but the point is he's clearly going to die. Okay, the assumption is he's just not dead yet. You have to wait till he gets dead. Okay, but right, he dies. But there's that small interim, time, a few minutes there where tuma doesn't happen yet. So let's say you took some kelim out of the house, then they wouldn't become tame. Okay, but the point is, it's obvious he's about to die. So and whereas what did we just say? If he's meguyad, right, we don't assume he's necessarily going to die. So why there do we, and here we don't? Amrabai lo kashya, same like we did before. Harabishim ben Elazar, harabanan. There's a machloket about it. One matches the other. We're going to see in a minute who matches who. Titanya. Midim ala meguyad ve'ei midin al hatzaluv. Rabbi Shimon, nekuda. That's Tanakama, okay? And that matches the Mishnah in Olo. That when you're meguyad, we assume you're going to die, so you can come to court and say, I saw the guy all cut up. He wasn't yet dead, but clearly he was going to die, and that's accepted. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, like our Mishnah, Omer afal hameguyad ei meidin, mipnei sheyachol lechavov lechiyot. He had this assumption that you could, okay, now this was a procedure they used to do. They would take hot metal, and it would kind of cauterize the blood, basically, and fix the injury. So there was a way that someone could be cured from this. So therefore, he thinks maybe someone came and did that, and therefore, you can't assume he's dead. Okay, so now, the assumption now is that our Mishnah holds like Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So they're going to say this creates a problem. Umi matzalukum ke Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, could you really hold like him? V'haktane seifa, we're going to see in the next page, that the end of the Mishnah, meaning right of the next Mishnah, it says, Maseh ba'asya, place, be'echad sheshulshaluhu layam, below al tabi adam el araglo. They put him down in the water, and only a leg came up. Okay. Now, amru chachamim, mina arkuva ulamala tinaseh. If the part of the leg was from above the knee, then you can assume that the guy didn't make it. Okay, because it's hard to live without, you know, if it gets cut off so high up, the assumption is he would die. But mina arkuva ulamata lo tinaseh. Okay, this, by the way, is based on laws of, okay, this is going to be interesting. It's like we learn, you know, people do experiments on rats and mice and stuff to learn about human behavior. Here the halacha is taking things we know about animals and saying it's true also for people. So an animal is considered a trefa if his leg is cut from above his knee, right? They don't exactly have knees, but the bottom part of his leg. If it's from the bottom part down, he's not considered a trefa. A trefa is an animal that's going to die within the next 12 months. And if the assumption is it's going to die in the next 12 months, then you can't eat it. It's called treif, right? Treif is not what we call treif, right? Treif is more what we call nevela. Nevela, what we call treif, is really nevela, which is an animal that wasn't shefted properly. A treif is an animal that's going to die anyway within the next 12 months. You can't sheft that animal. It's not a kosher animal. So they're learning from dinim of treifa that since the animal will die within 12 months, you can assume the person will die within the next 12 months. Some of the mafreshim here say, based on this, you have to wait 12 months for her to get remarried. Yes, she could get remarried, but she has to wait the 12 months because maybe he survived 12 months. Anyway, what do you have here? This distinction between above and below, and that comes from the animals. So what do they say? So here, now why is this a problem to say this is Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar? Here you see that if something was cut off from his body, right, from above the knee, we can assume he's dead, even though you could say, well, maybe someone could come and cauterize the blood and he can actually survive. So, what do they say? Shani Maya demarzu maka. Since he's in the water makes it much worse, and it's going to cause him to die. Okay? Vahama Rabba Barbrachana, Lididi Chazi Liahutaya, Deshaka Safsira Vagaya de Lagamle, Velo Afsikte Lenaarute. Now he's going against this whole thing of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. What do you mean you can fix something like this? I saw this Arab guy, an Arab socher, merchant. He took a knife, he chopped the leg of his camel, and the camel didn't even finish his screaming, and he was already dead. And he died on sight. So again, we're going to learn from animals, right? If he died on sight, well, then the same thing should happen for a person. It's not going to be that someone could come and cauterize the blood and fix it, and no, it's not possible. So now we have a contradiction between this story of the Gamal and the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. So what are we going to answer? So two possible answers. Amar Abaye, hayi kachi shahavya. You can assume that Gamal was weak. It was a weak camel to begin with, and that's why he died so quickly, but a regular person or a regular animal wouldn't die so quickly. Rava Amar, his great answer, b'sakim lubenet b'divrei akol. It was a red-hot sword that he used, and therefore... one second. If it was a red-hot sword, it should dafka help, right? So then, right, the Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar is talking about if you use a red-hot sword to kill him, to, wait, which one was with the red-hot sword? One second. That it would end up being that the, in order to answer this contradiction, you'd have to say. The person.
Yeah.
Right, in other words, in our case, it would be.
In which case, he's cauterizing it at the same time.
Our Mishnah. Right. So our Mishnah, where it says that a guy who was Meguyad, you can't testify about him, would be if he was Meguyad with a red hot sword. Okay? And then that would be right, then even Chachamim, so why is it L'divrei HaKol? Right, even Chachamim would agree in that case. That, right, so then in the end, what do they say? Our Mishnah is L'divrei HaKol. And our Mishnah is that they did it with a red hot sword. And even Chachamim would agree if someone got hit with a red hot sword, it would both, you know, injure him but cure him at the same time. Okay, hard for us to understand this whole, right? The Koran actually points out that certain medical surgical procedures are based on this, are based on this concept that they used for many generations about this cauterizing with this hot, you know, using hot metal to basically cure wounds. Okay. If you see an animal eating him, you can't assume he's going to die. So now we're going to narrow the focus of this halacha. I'm Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, lo shanu ela mimakom she'ein nefesho yotza. Depends where he's by attacking him. If he's attacking him, you know, where his nefesh would go out, you know, some critical place like his neck, his heart, then that would be a problem. Aval mimakom she'nefesho yotza mi'idi. Sorry. Right, it's the opposite. Lo shanu ela mimakom she'ein nefesho yotza. If it's his hand, his foot, you know, then you can't testify. But mimakom she'nefesho yotza mi'idi. But I'm Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel. Shachat bo shnayim o rov shnayim. Now we're going to talk about, okay, we're going to, it's actually interesting. They use the word shchita, the lashon of shachat. If an animal, what do you know? When you do shchita, there's two things they cut, right? The esophagus and the trachea. So if they're shochet, both simanim or rov of both simanim, then the animal's dead. So they're going to learn it the same for here. If someone cut someone's neck and they cut their esophagus and trachea, or most of the esophagus and most of the trachea, ubarach, and the guy who was dying ran off, and we never saw what happened after that, mi'idim, you can testify that he's dead. So Gemara says, ini, could that really be true? That Shmuel said this, and the Rav Yehuda said the name of Shmuel, but how am I Rav Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, he says somewhere else, okay, the same person says something that seems to contradict. Shachat bo shnayim arov shnayim biramaz va'amar kitvuget liishti. Okay, after someone cuts your neck, and then he immediately says, right, he doesn't say, but he, because he can't talk, because he has no trachea. But Adim are standing right next to him, and they say, would you like us to give a get to your wife? Why would they do that? So the wife won't have to do yibum, okay? So would you like us to give a get to your wife? And he kind of nods, like, you know, indicates maybe with his hand or something. He indicates that he wants them to. So what do you see here? He's alive. He's treated as a live man. So how could you say he's a dead man? So they give the obvious answer, which is chai hu now, but safo lamud. And as, yes, at that moment you could treat him as alive, but you know that in a few minutes this guy's going to die. Elam, so now they say, well, if that's the case, elam e'ata yehe gole al yado. We have a halacha that if you kill someone b'shogeg, this is actually interesting, if you kill someone on purpose, so even if you did something that caused his death and he died a few days later, right, whenever we hear of a pigua, right, so you don't hear about all the injuries yet, a few days later, you know, sometimes people who are in the hospitals in a serious situation, in a matzav kasha, they end up dying. And clearly it was from the pigua, right? But if you kill someone b'shogeg, you're not liable if they didn't die right away, because maybe something else caused their death, and therefore you're not responsible. So the only thing I can think of is if you're operating on someone, how else you could accidentally cut two of their simanim. But anyway, they're saying, if we're assuming that this guy is dead from the fact that you cut the simanim in sofo lamut, well then, he should go to galut, because he did die from the cutting. So alama tanya, why does it say in the brayta shachat shnayim or rov shnayim? Hareze eino gole. It says you don't go to galut. So now they say ha itmar ala. They're going to give two reasons. Amar Rav Hoshaya cheshina shema haruach bil balto. Maybe once you cut him open, the wind came in and the wind caused the death. Inami shema iu ki rev mitato. Maybe he was like, what's the word? In Hebrew, it's pure case. He was like thrashing around from
writhing.
Okay. And he, therefore, caused his death to happen sooner. So it could be one of those. Two, my benayu, so what would there be a difference for halacha? Deshachte bebeite deshisha uparkis. If you did it in a house of shayish, I don't know why particularly shayish, but the point is no air came in at all. Okay, there was no wind. And he was mifarkes, right? He was writhing around. And therefore, it would depend on which one you'd said. Inami deshachte bebara velo parkis, or you did it outside, but the guy just didn't breathe at all. He was still. And therefore you would say, well, maybe it was the wind and not the, right, that would cause it. Okay. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, lo kol, now he says, right, not everything is equal. Ibaya lehu, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava lekula palik or lechumra palik. Is he going lekula or lechumra when he says, it depends on the situation? Tashma, let's learn from here. Dahu gavra detava bekarme, vaskuhu abehed yelabatar talton yomin. What happens? A guy drowned in this place called Karmi, and they pulled him out in Behedya, lebatar talton yomin, after 3 days. And Rav Dimi min Naharda, so it was after 3 days, and Rav Dimi from Naharda married off Lidabitu, his wife. He said, it's okay, we accept it after 3 days. Vitu, in another case, Ahu Gavra de Itba b'diglat, he drowned in Diglat, Basku Agishra de Shivstina, they took him out at the Gesher of Shivistina, V'ansaba Rava Lidabitu, apparently according to the Quran, it was a very famous bridge by the Tigris River there. And Rava married off his wife, Apuma de Shushbine, by the testimony of his friends who saw him, Libatar Chamisha Yome, after 5 days. Okay? So here, what do you see? Iyamar Bishlam Alakula Palig, Inu Davik Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, right? If you say the Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava was going Lakula, these guys all paskin based on him. And Iyamar Lachumra Palig, if you say, no, he thinks it's even quicker and not longer than 3 days, Inu Davik Kiman, who could they have held by? So it must be that he went Lakula, but now the answer, no. Both these cases happen in the water, and Shani Maya did Samte. The water contracts, meaning it doesn't allow the body to kind of get puffy and explode and not look the same. So it kind of like keeps it frozen in place. In which case, if you take it out, even after many days, you can identify it. Bahamar, didn't we just say on the daf before, Maya Marzumaka, it makes it worse? So they say no. Hani Mile Dika Maka. When there's an injury, so the, you know, a cut, then the water makes it worse. Avalhecha deleka maka, but if there's no maka and the body's intact and it just drowned, then mitzmatzami. Then it's gonna contract and it's gonna keep it in its place. Vahana, but then they say one thing is that Vahana Mile dechi asku chazi bashate. Aval ishtehe mitva tafach. But then you have to look at it right when it comes out. If you don't look at it right when it comes out, and here obviously it's a machloka, it was me right away, right? Is it within a few days? Is it within a few hours? Is it within a few minutes, right? But once it comes out of the water, then immediately after it's going to disintegrate, and right, the question is, was immediate, but then you have to identify it right upon coming out of the water.
Which is complicated because coming up somewhere else, and you have to get people from
the Yes, it's complicated. New Mishnah. Nafal l'mayim. Now, what if someone falls in the water? This we touched on before already. Once someone falls in the water, whether the water is a body of water, we're going to see in the Gemara, they're going to define, what does it mean, that you can see all exits of the water from where you are, like a small lake, river, something, you know, well, not a river, a small lake, I would say. So according to Tanakhama here, it doesn't matter whether it's Yesh Lamsof or whether it's the Mediterranean or the Atlantic Ocean or whatever it might be. Ishto Asura, Divrei Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim omrim, Mayim sheyesh lahem sof, ishto muteret. Shein lahem sof, ishto asura. It depends, right? If it yesh lahem sof, then you can assume, if you didn't see him come out, the guy's dead. But shein lahem sof, you can't assume anything. Hechidami mayim sheyesh lahem sof. Oh, did I skip? I totally skipped. Sorry. Okay, I jumped to the Brayta by accident. Okay, I knew, I was thinking. I didn't remember seeing that in the Mishnah. Okay, so let's just go back for a minute to the Mishnah. Nafal L'mayim bein sheyesh lahem sof, bein shein lahem sof, ishto asura. Amar Rabbi Meir, period. Now, Amar Rabbi Meir, okay, which we now see in the Brayta that that's Rabbi Meir's opinion, and Chachamim disagree with him. But here says Rabbi Meir, Ma'aseh be'achad shenafal lebor hagadol. He fell into a bor, okay, which obviously is yesh lahem sof. Ve'ala la'achar shlosha yamim. Okay, and after 3 days, he came up out of the bor. Right? Somehow he managed for 3 days under the bore, and therefore, right, the assumption is that nobody's standing watching all exits of the water for 3 days long, right? Amar Rabbi Yossi, and therefore he's not believed. Amar Rabbi Yossi, now we're going to hear a different, opposite opinion. Ma'aseh b'suma she'arad litbol. There was a blind guy who went to litbol b'ma'ara, okay, also, yesh lahem sof. B'yarab moshcho acharav, the guy who helped him to see, went with him. V'shahu k'desh teitzei nafsham. And they waited, and, you know, they both disappeared. Nobody came out. They waited until they were dead, like enough time that you would assume someone would die. But you see, you went to show to him, and they did, right? They married off their wives. So here you see, Mayim Sheyesh Lahem Sof, we allow you to. B'shuv Ma'aseh, and this is the one we saw, Ba'asya, Be'achad Sheshol Shaluhu Layam, V'lo Al Tav Yadam Ela Raglo, right? He, all they found was his leg. Amru chachamim, minar kuvulumala tinase, minar kuvulumata lo tinase. So again, what do you see? They, even though you don't see the dead body, right, we can assume that the guy was dead. Okay. Tana Rabbanan. So now we'll see what I read before by accident. Nafal lamayim ben sheyesh lem sof ben shein lem sof ishto asura divrei Rabbi Meir. The chachamim omrim, he distinguishes. Mayim sheyesh lem sof ishto muteret, b'shein lem sof ishto asura. Okay, so it's going to depend if yesh lem sof or ein lem sof according to chachamim. So now they say, hechidami mayim shein yesh lem sof. What is the case? What does it mean, mayim sheyesh lem sof? Like I said already, abai amar abai, kol she'omei b'ro'eh me'arba ruchotav. If you can see all the edges of the water, that's mayim sheyesh lem sof. Hahu gavra, now we're going to see another story. Detava ba'agma de samke, he drowned in this agam called samke, in sabar Rav Shila l'debitu, and Rav Shila married off his wife. Here we're going to have a great story. Amale Rav l'shmuel. Rav says to Shmuel, now what's the story? This is an agam that we assume is mayim sheyesh lem sof, because it was a lake. Most lakes, no, not all, right? The Kinneret, you can't see all sides, but assuming this was a lake where you could see all sides, this guy matired it. Now, Rav and Shmuel, you know, always argue, okay? This is a great story because you're going to see that they had a nice relationship and they worked together, okay? And they, even at the end, you're going to see particularly nice things they say to each other because it doesn't always happen, right? Some of these rabbis argued and not such pleasant relationships between them. Amalei Rav l'Shmuel, Tanya Shmete. Rav says, we should put this guy in Nidoy for what he did because he went against Chachamim. Chachamim say, right, Mayim Sheyesh Lem Sof, we're not allowed to marry his wife off. And this guy took a case of Mayim Sheyesh Lem Sof, this agam, the guy drowned, and we don't know for sure, though. We never saw him come out, right? And he said, the wife's allowed to marry, and really, oh, I'm sorry, one second. Dapka, I said it wrong. It's Mayim She'en Lehem Sof. Sorry, it was a big agam. It was Ein Lehem Sof, and therefore, what should we say? Mayim She'en Lehem Sof, right? You shouldn't be allowed to remarry. And he allowed her to remarry, okay? So now, Rav says, let's put this guy in Nidoy, because he gave this psak halacha, that when it's a case of Mayim She'en Lehem Sof, the woman's allowed to get remarried. That's like a huge problem, right? It goes totally against what we say, la halacha. So Amar Le, so Shmuel says very smartly, Nishlach Le Bereisha, let's first ask him what happened. Before we jump to conclusions, right, it's a great, I don't start jumping to conclusions, but why don't we really see what the situation was? Maybe we're misunderstanding something. So they ask him a question. They say, what do you think, by the way, about the sugif? Does Mayim Ein Lehem Sof, right, the big body of water, is the wife mutar or asura to get married? He sends back, the wife is asura. Now they ask him another question. Right? They're clearly going in a very circuitous way. Right? They're not going directly. They want to kind of gather their facts. Ba'agma desamke, mayim sheyesh lehem sof, or mayim she'en lehem sof. Shalach le, mayim she'en lehem sofu. Okay, so now, what has he basically said? He says the halacha is against what he paskined. Okay, so now they have to be direct, they have no choice. Umar, my time avid hachi, so why did you do that? So now, what does he say? Mita te'ina, ana. I made a mistake. Savre kevan dekavu v'kaimu, kemayim sheyesh lehem sof dami. I thought that because the water doesn't move, it's stagnant water, it's considered mayim sheyesh lehem sof. Vilohi, but then I realized I was wrong. Kevan di'ika gale, since there's waves, imor gale eshpalu. Okay? So basically, right, I realized that the waves can move him somewhere else and then we wouldn't see him. So he thought that it was right that basically we're going to see there's two things with water. Number one, you won't see him get out. But number two, the water takes you, yeah, right? The waves take you far off course, yeah, which would mean that if the waters are stagnant, then maybe they wouldn't, even if Ein Lehem Sof, it would be mutar to marry.
So now
they realize that the guy just made a mistake. So Kari Shmuel, Alei de Rav, Shmuel says to Rav about this pasuk, Lo yu'unel et tzadik kol aven. Bad things don't happen to tzaddikim. In other words, God protected you from making the mistake of putting this guy in Nidoy, okay? Because you would have made a big mistake, because really he didn't do anything wrong, he just made a mistake. And then Kare Rav, Alei de Shmuel, Rav says to Shmuel, U'tshua b'rov yo'etz. No, my tshua came from a good advisor. You are my good advisor, and you advise me well. Okay, last story for today. We'll end with this, and then, okay. Tanya, Amar Rebbe, Ma'aseh b'shnei b'nei adam b'chamim mich. They were doing traps for fish in the Yarden. This is like a cave where there's fish pools in them. Okay, so some of it is outside the water because it's a cave. So it has high ceilings, but within it there's these fish pools. So one of them went into this mechilat dagim, v'shak'ach haman, it got dark, v'lo ra'ah pitcha shel mechilah. Okay, so he couldn't find the opening to the cave to get out. So he was stuck in this cave. Now his friend didn't know he was in a cave, okay? His friend was with him. If he's in the cave, then he's out of the water because he's in this cave. And there's a cave with water, but he can breathe. There's a ceiling there. V'shak'ach chabero k'deshe t'seh nafsho. His friend waited till he died, like enough time, he assumed the guy must be dead now. Ubaba hodia b'toch beito. Okay. Lemachar, so he tells his family the guy's dead. Lemachar zarcha chama, the sun rose, v'hikir pitcha shel mechila, and he was able to find the exit of the mechila. Ubaba matza hespe gadol b'toch beito. He sees everybody eulogizing him. Amar Rebbe, kam gdolim debre chachamim shamru mayim sheesh lehem sof ishto muteret, sheen lehem sof ishto asura. It's how great are chachamim that they realize that there's ways for people to get out of the water. And therefore, you shouldn't be matir this mayim she'en lam sof kiss. So they say, what do you mean? Yihachi mayim she'esh lam sof nami lichush l'mechilat shal dagim. But then even in a mayim she'esh lam sof, you should be concerned. Maybe this guy found a cave with fish, a fish cave, and then basically he'd be able to survive. So they say, ah, b'mayim she'esh lam sof mechilat shal dagim lo shchicha. It's not so common to find this. Okay, it's not so common to have a mechila of dagim, and therefore, in a mayim she'esh lam sof, if you don't see the guy, you assume he's dead. And a mayim she'en lam sof, since there's ways he could possibly save himself, or if he did get out, you wouldn't necessarily know where he was. Therefore, we say that the woman can't get married based on that. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, more details about this. Okay, tomorrow we'll finish to Kuf Chaf Bet Amud Aleph at the very bottom at the last Mishnah. And then on Tuesday, we'll finish up with the Kuf Chaf Bet Amud Aleph. And then, like I said, I will have a Siyum, and Seth will speak about modern day stuff, that, you know, things that go on in the Batei Din that relate to Chalitza and relate to other cases that we learned in the Masechet.